This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Fellas, let's have a conversation. Like, if you're like me and every other person working from home, you have been staring at your gray hairs and all of your colleagues' gray hairs on video calls for months now. So if you've been thinking about coloring your hair, yes, I said it. If you've been thinking about adding a little color, you are not alone. Last week, I heard about Madison Reed Mister, and what caught my attention was the before and after shots of the beards. Madison Reed Mister is gray blending, natural color for your hair and your beard. And the best part is the blend. You don't have to worry about that shoe polish look. There's none of that here. So maybe you're not looking for a drastic change. Maybe you just want a little more pepper and a little less salt. Whatever look you're going for, Madison Reed Mister makes it easy to find your color match right there on the website. And they deliver it right to your door, and the process is quick and it's easy. You simply apply the color gel to dry hair, you apply the color activator, you wait 10 minutes, you rinse, you shampoo, you look like a million bucks. The natural looking hair color fades gradually, so there is no commitment. Simply go to MadisonReedMister.com, that's MadisonReedMR.com, and use the code JR and get 10% off and free shipping on your first box of Madison Reed Mister. One more time, make sure you use the promo code JR.
This isn't golf, and this isn't a social distance sport. When college football players are playing college football, and it's 100 guys, there's no social distancing. There's guys sweating on each other. There's guys tackling each other. There's a lot of contact. I think that's the thing that has really concerned a bunch of coaches.
Yo, 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 what's going on? Right off the very top, let me say it feels amazing to be back on the Side Hustle Grind, and even better to have you here with me. Thanks for making this pod part of your routine and for helping us keep this thing going 139 episodes strong. Now, obviously, while I was gone, a major, complex, multi-layered story broke out in college football, and that's the fall season. The fall season is in flux for some, and it's straight up canceled for others. This is the kind of topic that deserves an expert deep dive, and that's exactly what I want to do right now with one of the best in the business, Bruce Feldman. He joins me today via Fox Sports and The Athletic. Make sure to check out all the great work he does over in those spots if you are not doing so already. Nobody could have seen this next conversation coming 5 months back on the calendar, but here we are. And now we are talking about the possibility of a year without college football, so let's get straight to it. Episode 139 of the Jim Rome Podcast with Bruce Feldman starts right now. Bruce, it is great to have you on our Side Hustle, the long-form interview, the podcast. Before we get into everything crazy that's going on in college football, bring me up to date. How are you doing, and how is everybody around you doing during this pandemic?
We're doing pretty well. Thanks for asking, Jim. I mean, it's been, like, for everybody, it's crazy times right now, you know? And I think you worry about your loved ones, depending on where they are in the country and how they're dealing with it. And, you know, from the other side of it, you know, it's also your dealing with it from a work standpoint. And I think everybody has their own kind of unique story and how they're addressing it and dealing with it, because we're all in uncharted waters here, you know?
No, there's no doubt. And from a work standpoint, Bruce, it's like it's unprecedented, it's uncharted, it's wild, it's crazy. Like, how would you describe the overall state of college football right now in the middle of August?
Totally chaotic. That would be the two words I would use to describe as a headline. It is totally chaotic. This is a sport that has no centralized leadership. It is very regional. It is very polarizing. And now it's gotten even more political. So it's just a big mess. The craziest parts to me are when you had the Big Ten and the Pac-12 both decide they're not going to play in the fall. I think the Big Ten piece of this story has exploded into such a uproar between how the conference and a new commissioner, Kevin Warren, handled it, how much pushback there has been from players, not to mention fans, and even Big Ten coaches. And I think the fallout compared to what it is in the Pac-12, where a lot of the coaches, you know, we did a big story in The Athletic about it, they totally understand and agreed with the decision, whereas you just didn't have that. You had the complete opposite in the Big Ten, and they have offered no explanation and no specifics at a time when I think it probably would behoove them to have done so, and who knows where this thing is headed in the next few days and weeks.
You know, it's such a great point, because the reaction, there's been so much heat around the Big Ten for that decision and for the way they handled that. I mean, ultimately, the Big Ten did postpone that fall season. The Pac-12 followed suit shortly thereafter. So with respect to those two conferences, Bruce, what did the decisions ultimately come down to?
Well, so in the Pac-12, it's a little easier to digest. The Pac-12, their medical experts had not only given the coaches and ADs as well as the leadership among those schools a detailed report on, okay, here are the things we are concerned with. We are concerned with issues related to the lungs. We are very concerned with some of the issues that we've now addressing related to the heart. And that's a big piece of it. But also it was a really big piece about, we have identified five different places in the Pac-12 that would need to ramp up testing to daily capacities. And that is something that they felt like was not realistic at several of these schools anytime soon. So for them, that became a big factor in how they made their decision. And keep in mind, you know, you and I are both in Southern California based, and there are issues there. A lot of the football programs weren't even able to get back on the field and to do things beyond just the training phase, which is different than what's going on at other parts of the country. So that was that. The Big Ten one to me is bewildering for this standpoint. So from our reporting at The Athletic, the Big Ten has identified at least 10 cases of players who have dealt with some sort of heart issues stemming from contracting COVID. Yet when Kevin Warren, who's the new commissioner, addressed it, first on Big Ten Network, and credit to Dave Revson, the host there, he pressed Kevin Warren for specifics. Kevin Warren offered none of them. He didn't give any detail, any rationale. The conference presidents didn't seem like they wanted to put anything forward. So there's a lot of people, especially players, and we've seen this with Justin Fields, the Ohio State quarterback, and a lot of other players who have taken to social media and now have taken to TV networks to say, hey, we got no answers here, and we deserve an explanation. We've done everything that the coaches and universities had asked, and they're not telling us anything. And they feel like they are entitled to more of an explanation, and for some reason, and I don't know what it is, because like I said, in our reporting, we've heard some of these things from behind the scenes from people in the conference, yet when the whole college football world, and quite honestly, the whole sports world, was paying attention to Kevin Warren in the Big Ten, they offered no details, nothing. And I really feel like that was a huge mistake and a miscalculation, and they're paying for it now from a PR standpoint, where you've had, whether it's Ryan Day from Ohio State or Jim Harbaugh or James Franklin or certainly Scott Frost of Nebraska, these coaches have been really vocal and pushed back, and it's a real, real it's something that's not going to go away anytime soon.
You know, there's so much in that response to unpack, and that's a really, really good response. I appreciate that. You know, it seems to me, Bruce, we could talk about whether or not we should be playing college football or we should be doing any of these things, but I think it's not too much to ask for some transparency. If you're going to make that decision, I'm sure people will fall in line, but explain the decision so people know. But what about this whole notion of, like, I understand that, for instance, in the Pac-12, there might be five hotspots. I understand there are parts of the country where this is certainly worse than other spots, but help me with this. Like, you've got the Pac-12, you have the Big Ten, and they've postponed their fall seasons, but you've got the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12, and for the time being, they're all going to push forward. I wonder about the medical aspect. For instance, do the three, Bruce, that are going to play, do they have a higher risk tolerance, or are their medical experts telling them something different than what the Pac-12 and the Big Ten heard?
I think it's as much the latter as, you know, it's probably both, quite honestly. But in the Big 12, you've had one of their medical experts they found has I don't say has absolved them of a lot of the concern, but has taken a different perspective than certainly the experts, the medical experts at the Pac-12 and the Big Ten have. And so, you know, it's an interesting situation where you can find different people to tell you maybe what you want to hear. Is that part of it? Is that part of the political piece of this too? I don't know, you know, which side people fall on that. I will say this, and I've heard this from all over the spectrum in terms of college athletics, the specter of pending looming litigation and lawsuits that could be hanging over colleges and college sports in the wake of this is a very real concern for a lot of people. And so if you put that in, you know, and so somebody had mentioned, you know, tobacco lawsuits and things of like trying to make comparisons, because at one point you had some schools trying to get players to sign waivers about coming back. And even if you had players who said, you know, they tweeted out that they're all in favor of coming back and they want to play, I don't, when you hear from attorneys, they say, you know, that's not going to absolve the schools from responsibility if it comes to that. And so I think when you look at it and say, okay, there's, in a regular year, not with half the schools playing or not, but there's 13,000 division or FBS college football players. Yes, the numbers and percentages of 18 to 22 year olds would indicate that there is a low number percentage wise. But when you're basing it on 13,000, those odds aren't great for something bad to happen at somebody's school. And that's one of the things that I think has been hard for a lot of people in leadership, whether you're an AD or a college president, to put their stamp on. And I think that's one of the things that's made it really, really challenging. And quite honestly, Jim, the Big Ten was more transparent than certainly especially the SEC has been when it comes to cases and that sort of thing, and what they're disclosing. So I think we don't know a lot about how some of these players who have contracted COVID, what it's done to their bodies. And I'm not saying we need to know that Johnny Smith at this school or something, what happened to that specific, you know, because there's HIPAA and privacy laws prevent that. But it just in terms of, are there some cases? We found out about some in the Big Ten because a mom of an Indiana football player went on Facebook and talked about him being rushed to the ER and worrying about heart issues. We found out about a player at the University of Houston because he went to social media and talked about it. But I think if you were to ask me or anybody who covers the sport, well, what do you really think? Should they play? Should they not? And the reality is, and this would be my answer, is I don't know. I don't have access to the information that a Greg Sankey or some of the conference commissioners have, because they're the ones who will know specifically what their schools in their footprint are dealing with. And they're not really sharing a lot of that information. So they have more of the information to make the determination than anybody else does.
You know, it's so interesting, Bruce, in that sense, too, because I think that as time goes on, we learn more and more. I mean, I'm no doctor, I'm no medical expert, but I can say this. I have a college-age son, and I'm not saying that my son necessarily feels this way or that all of his friends feel this way, but I can tell you that, you know, a number of weeks back, maybe a couple of months back, their thinking was, I'm going to get it. I know I'm going to get it. I'm going to have it for 2 weeks. I'm going to quarantine. Then it's going to go away. But the fact of the matter is that's not it, right? Like all these stories that we're hearing about, there could be long-term permanent effects, and that's got to be really terrifying to a lot of people. But at the same time, they want to play. Players always want to play, but they do want to play. Like, it's all speculative, but if you had to guess, if you look at the Big 12, the ACC, and the SEC, and they all say they want to go ahead, Bruce, with their schedules, in your opinion, how likely is it that those three conferences play a full schedule?
I think there's a pretty good chance they're going to play games in September when they intend to, whether they start, you know, in the Big 12 with non-conference games on the 12th. And, you know, I think it depends, honestly, on what happens in certain locales, meaning right now Notre Dame has become a hotspot in this week. They felt like this university felt like it was handling it well a week ago, and then I don't know if it was from a party or what, but all of a sudden there has been a big spike in South Bend, Indiana, related to that campus. And middle of the week, the AD is saying, hey, we're going to push pause and hold off on on football practice for today and maybe for the next couple of days. And so if something like that happens, then all of a sudden, I think it's such a, you know, that expression, a fluid situation. It is really that. I think that schools that I've talked to, especially the optimistic ones, most optimistic ones in the SEC, will feel, hey, we have a decent handle on how this all works. The part that scares them so much is what happens when the regular students come back on campus. Well, now the regular students are starting to come back on campus. How much will they take this seriously and heed the warnings? Will they wear masks? Will they wear social distance? And I mean, I think, Jim, your point about having a college age son is that perspective. Like, a lot of the players in college football, you know, they may worry about it more. Well, if I test positive, that means I'm going to be quarantined and I'm going to miss a couple of games. If it's a college student who thinks, you know what, I may not have symptoms, I'll be fine. You know, they're not worried about missing games or anything. So, you know, does that mean they're more likely to get it, maybe be somebody who can spread it to other people, even if they're not symptomatic? And then all of a sudden, the concern is you have a lot of cases on a campus, and does that crack through this quote-unquote bubble that really isn't that much of a bubble when it comes to college football programs? Because, again, this isn't golf, and this isn't a social distance sport. When college football players are playing college football and it's 100 guys, there's no social distancing, there's guys sweating on each other, there's guys tackling each other, there's a lot of contact, I think that's the thing that has really concerned a bunch of coaches. I know it concerned a bunch of coaches in the Pac-12 about, hey, we can handle this pretty well, but if there's some cases that get inside our program, then does it spread significantly while we're doing football stuff? And I think that's the thing where, you know, I don't want to say there's no right answers, but I would say there's no easy answers to that.
Right. Like, Bruce, for instance, this is not the first time this question has been posed. And believe me, you and I are in a similar spot. Like, this is in part how we make our living. Like, believe me, nobody wants college football more than me. I really, really want this to happen, although I do have my obvious reservations. But to this question of, if it's not safe enough for the kids to go to class every single day, and it's not, that's why they have hybrids. Like, my son Jake is going to go, he's in Madison, he's going to go to class once a week. How would the administrators answer the question? If it's not safe to go to class every single day, how then is it safe to run a football program?
That's a hard thing to answer on a couple levels, because on one hand, and I know this came up where you would see people on social media say, well, this seems like very, you know, what, they're going to let regular students go, but they can't play football. Well, part of it is because, and again, this I got from a Pac-12 AD, made the point of, listen, for the regular student, they are told to social distance, to wear a mask, and follow certain protocols. Those protocols cannot happen to the same depth when you are playing football during a football practice. It's just not the same thing. Where a football practice, you have guys on, you know, at the end of the day, it is not, you are not going to have people 6 feet apart at all times in a college football practice and everybody wear masks. So there is more risk of spreading in that way. It's different than if they're just in this training phase when they're training in small groups, they can wear a mask, it's just different on that part. And I think the other piece of that equation is, and this is where it starts getting to like the Jay Billis, you know, component of the NCAA farcical nature of what it is now all of a sudden you're going to say, are they employees? Because you're creating a separate class for college football players, which honestly, to some degree, maybe to a large degree, has already existed, right? Whether they want to call them student athletes or not, it's not to say that players who are playing college football are not taking school seriously or not, don't benefit from it on an academic standpoint, but they are not normal students in any way in terms of what they're asked. And so the idea that this would rip away that veil of amateurism that really shouldn't, you know, it hasn't existed for a long time, but it puts the NCAA and it puts the college sports model in a different place legally, potentially. And I think that's something that also scares them.
Whether you're working from home or working on your fitness, you want to make sure that what you're listening to is what you're listening to, and not what your roommates or neighbors or significant other or kids are listening to. Like, everybody needs an amazing pair of wireless earbuds. But before you drop hundreds of bucks on a pair, make sure you check out wireless earbuds from Raycon. You already know Raycon earbuds start at about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market, and they sound just as amazing as the other top audio brands that you know of. And their newest model, the Everyday E25 earbuds, are their best ones yet. With 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a more compact design that gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. I love them. Raycon's wireless earbuds are so comfortable, they're perfect for both conference calls or binging podcasts. And unlike some of your other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are stylish and discreet. There are no dangling wires or stems to distract anybody during those video calls. And remember, the company was co-founded by Ray J and celebrities like Snoop Dogg, Brandy, J.R. Smith, Mike Tyson. They're obsessed with their Raycons. Now is the time for you to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/JR. That's buyraycon.com/JR for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. Once again, buyraycon.com/JR. In addition to that, Bruce, I thought that you wrote a really interesting piece for The Athletic, and it's on the effect that COVID-19 is having on some of the nation's top high school players, and maybe even some players that are not highly rated but really need another season of tape. What does that look like for high school players, and generally, how are some of these families handling it?
Yeah, I think the issue, Jim, is you're going to have a lot of times players may have been evaluated earlier, and maybe because the calendar has moved up, but for some of them, they won't get that chance right now. Look, and in the state of California, it's not going to be a college football season. So there's going to be opportunities that they won't get. And it's really unfortunate that it's gone. You know, this is one of the subplots of this. And you just think about how many people are not going to get the opportunities that they probably would have gotten if it was a quote-unquote normal 2020 fall season in terms of that as it relates to getting scholarships and everything. And plus, I think there's going to be a backlog of how universities are going to handle this in terms of some students are going to try to leave whatever state they're in to go play in some environment that may have high school football. I think there's going to be a lot of schools who will say, you know what, we're going to have to hold on to some scholarships because we don't know how this is going to play out with the team that we may not be playing or guys who may redshirt. So that creates less opportunities. And then there's also, on top of all that, the money element of it. Schools are going to be hammered financially by this, just to a large degree, the rest of the country is because of it. And I think that's going to be hard for them to budget what they do going forward in 2021 and beyond. And, you know, it's just, I think it's hard to put specific numbers across on averages because it's going to affect all universities probably a little different depending on where they are and how they've budgeted it.
I don't think there's any doubt either, Bruce, that you've got some, like, if you're a highly recruited player and you already have offers, then you're probably all right. But there are kids that needed another year of tape. There are kids that want to play college football. And for instance, if they're in California here, you know they're leaving the state and they're going to take their shot. I've got friends who are doing this, so you see that too. Let me jump around a little bit. You did also a fascinating piece for The Athletic this week on a route that both NFL and college receivers use, and it's dominating defenses. It's the Lucy route. What is the Lucy route? What's the story behind that?
All right, so this was a fun piece to work on. I got to spend a ton of time around LSU late last year. Joe Brady, who's now the offensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers, had made this passing reference on Lucy's, and I was like, I didn't know what that was. He was talking about Michael Thomas had basically set the NFL record for, it was going to set the NFL record for reception, and most of the damage was done on Lucy, she said. So I went to the Saints receivers coach, Curtis Johnson. I was like, okay, what is it? Like, where did it come from? And the origin story of this is crazy because Curtis Johnson's been a receiver coach forever, had a lot of really good players, but he was saying that Eric Yarber, who is the Rams receivers coach and has been around the NFL, was actually a really good receiver for Dennis Erickson at Idaho in the mid-80s. And it turned out when I talked to Yarber, he was like, yeah, I was supposed to run a route a certain way, and I couldn't get there because of the defensive player, the linebacker was walling me off. I put my foot in the ground, and I reacted on instinct. I got yelled at, and we got a completion. And it just, sometimes things happen by accident. And that's how Rich Rodriguez discovered the zone read at Glenville State a long time ago in West Virginia. And this is certainly how this route kind of evolved. And Sean Payton tweaked it and how he dressed it up. And what they have told me is Michael Thomas, because of his unique size and quickness and strength, but also because he's really super smart and patient, he's made it an unstoppable route for defenses. And it's not just him. Now Eric Yarber has a guy in Cooper Kupp. He said he is phenomenal at it because he's really smart, because he's got terrific quickness. And it's funny where you're seeing this, you know, Christian McCaffrey, Norv Turner was telling me they did it with Christian McCaffrey in Carolina last year. And so it's become the most unstoppable play in football. And it was just funny to hear how it has evolved and where it came from, and basically on accident. And again, it's like, it's one of those stories where it's deep in the weeds in football, but you're just like, wow, this is a language you kind of never thought, not that you never thought it existed, but it's just, everybody has their own theories. There's a lot of duplication around football, but also talking to the coaches, they're like, you know what? A lot of guys just don't have a feel for running it. And Michael Thomas is just great at it. And you're seeing guys who are really good at it. And you know, that was the nature of the story. And I just think it's one of those things that deep within football, it's something that exists. And it's just, if you watch the game on TV as a casual, even as a big fan, you just don't know the stories behind it.
I had never heard it. I had never heard of it before. It's a great, great piece. It's a great read. And then on top of that, Bruce, you've got a new book coming out with Ed Orgeron this fall, and you certainly have worked with him in the past. This book is called Flip the Script, and I talk about things like this all the time, Bruce. I love that. I'm all about people having to recreate, reimagine, or reinvent themselves. In this case, why and how did Orgeron go about flipping his script?
A couple of things were big for Jim. For the first standpoint is you had a guy who has had to deal with some substance issues from drinking, especially. And I think that kind of put his mindset into, okay, what kind of adjustments do I need to make? I got to be brutally honest with myself. And I think so having that lens at which he looks at things through, I think probably puts him maybe in a different place than a lot of people, especially a lot of football coaches who are typically the most stubborn people in sports, because they feel like they have to, especially college, they have to manage 100 teenagers or 120-year-olds, and they feel like they have to project a certain thing. And with him, he becomes a Pete Carroll guy. They really built USC into a powerhouse that won championships. He gets the Ole Miss head coaching job. It's not exactly the greatest resource, you know, situation. He doesn't feel like the bosses trust him entirely, and a little bit like he's set up to fail. And eventually, after 3 years, he brings in some good talent, but he gets fired, and it's a spectacular failure. And I think what helped him the most was he was honest enough with himself to go, I got to change me. I don't, whether the AD wasn't supporting me or whether this happened or that happened, if I don't change me, none of it matters. And he looked in the mirror, and I think he made some really hard, asked some really hard questions, and that's how it started. And it grew from there. It grew from the time when he had a really good run replacing Lane Kiffin as the interim at USC. He didn't get the job. I think he felt like he was wrong, but I think at the same time, he learned from that. And that started this cycle where he ends up getting his dream job at LSU, and a lot of people still think he's that guy who was at Ole Miss or just a D-line guy. And the crazy thing, Jim, is a lot of times people think of innovators in football as X and O's guys necessarily. And it's true, like a Lincoln Riley or a Sean McVay or a Kyle Shanahan, those guys are definitely innovators. But I think and I realize this from talking to other coaches for this book, with Orgeron, in a lot of ways, he's very innovative, but he's very innovative in how he gets the team ready for Saturdays, in terms of almost no staff meetings, in terms of when they go to, like when they leave the hotel to get ready for the game. He doesn't want them sitting around. In terms of how he gets guys ready for Saturday. And that's really as important as any part of it. I mean, if you look at how they played last year, whether it's beating Alabama and Tuscaloosa or thumping Clemson in the national title game or blowing out Georgia or Oklahoma, like, they never had an off week. They never had an off Saturday. They were not at their best. There was never a game where they weren't putting out their A game. And I think part of that was how he got them ready and how you manage having a team to be loose and still yet very confident and very focused. And that's a hard balance to pull off when you're dealing with college athletes especially.
Well, and especially to the point that you have to get them ready every single week, but it sounds to me like he had to get himself ready before he could get anybody else ready. So, like, when he looked in the mirror, you mentioned the substance abuse. I mean, was that pretty much the thing, or did he see a lot of other things that he didn't like when he looked in that mirror? Like, what other things did he have to change to become who he is right now?
Well, I think he's savvy enough to learn. He has a lot of respect for Lane Kiffin, but I think when Lane got fired at USC, he was on his staff. He knew some of the things that Lane did, how they just did not, the players did not respond well to it. So I think he was writing things down all the time to say, hey, if I ever get my shot, this is how I'm going to do it. And so whether it was that or being around Les Miles and seeing how when things get stale, what do I have to do to keep things fresh and keep things focused? And so I think he not only learned from his big mistakes, he was smart enough to learn from other people's mistakes. And what was interesting to me working on the book, and something I honestly didn't know until we started doing the reporting on this, was, you know, in 2016, he turned the program around enough to get kept on as the interim. But in 2017, it was really rocky there as well. And he needed to learn from that. And all teams are not the same. And I think that's one of the things that I think is fascinating for this book from a coaching standpoint. I think is just, you know, everything has to change. You have to, you know, you set your standards of what you expect, but you have to be very proactive in how you manage people and how you manage personalities, because there's such a difference from year to year. And I think to be able to read the room, I think he had a really good sense of that.
Yes, the regular season is fun and all, but only one thing can compare to the excitement of the postseason, and that is DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. Both basketball and hockey have entered their respective playoffs, and DraftKings is putting you right in the center of the action. With millions in prizes throughout the week, there is no better place to make it rain. Start playing for free with your first deposit today. If you haven't tried it yet, daily fantasy sports are so easy to play. You just draft your players, you stay under the salary cap, and you pile up points based on your players' performance. There is no better way to put your sports knowledge to the test than to compete for millions of dollars in prizes throughout the week. But if daily fantasy is not your thing, DraftKings just launched Best Ball Contest for the football season. If you aren't familiar with Best Ball, simply head to the app right now and check it all out. I think you'll love it. Download the DraftKings app and use the promo code ROME. Play for free with your first deposit today. Compete for millions of bucks in total prizes, which are up for grabs this week. That's the promo code ROME to get a shot at millions of dollars in prizes all week long, only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Before I let you go, the annual Freaks List is also out on the Athletic site, and it's pinned at the top of your Twitter feed as well. You and I have talked about this. It's a tremendous annual tradition. The number one player on the list is Quiddy Pay, a defensive end from Michigan. Why is he a freak amongst freaks?
So in his case, this is a guy who obviously this was not a normal offseason, Jim. When I've worked on this, I usually have a lot of run-up time talking to a lot of coaches and strength coaches and everybody else. But because normally there wasn't a lot of off-season training for him, you probably didn't get as much of a picture into that. I did talk to also a lot of NFL scouts, and one thing that Quiddy Pay's name came up a bunch with them, and you would hear stories about a crazy change of direction, like what you would expect from a cornerback. You had a 270-pound defensive lineman, and in truth, this guy in high school was a state champion sprinter. He was a running back before he got to Michigan. He's put on 50 pounds since then. But Rashawn Gary was a guy I had on the Freaks List a few years ago, and this guy has even better change of direction according to his coaches at Michigan. So I was like, okay, it's always tricky to say who's going to be the number one guy, But after hearing some of the stuff I heard from people at Michigan, also from people I heard from in NFL scouting circles, I was like, all right, it's going to be Kwity Paye. But you could have made a case for probably any one of eight guys or so for that number one spot.
All right, so really quickly, let me ask you this. You and I have talked about this, but I think it's really important as it relates to that conversation. I think it's fascinating. But these freaks, are these freaks recruited or are they made? In other words, you mentioned the strength and conditioning aspect to it. Is the athlete the one doing the work? We know this, but how much of that and showing up on that list is about that pure God-given talent, and then how much of that is about the strength and conditioning coaches and the programs they design?
I think you got to have some from the beginning, but I think it's a lot on what they did. I mean, I go back to Saquon Barkley when he was at Penn State, and he was a top guy out of my list. And I remember talking to Charles Huff, who was now at Alabama on their staff, but he was the running back coach at Penn State. And the first year Saquon was there, he had a big freshman year. But there were a couple times where Huff identified where he got walked down by somebody on a long run or something, and they worked really hard about how do we get your speed and continue to develop it, not just so you're fast, you know, the first 20 yards, but how you don't get caught. And the couple of things they really drilled down on, and credit to Saquon especially because – he had the commitment to want to be the best he could be and to be great. So he did all that in the extra stuff, or I don't want to say necessarily extra stuff because it's like stuff that if you want to be at your best, it's going to take that. And so he did it, and you see that. I mean, I think of a guy like a Myles Garrett who did freaky things athletically at Texas A&M, but also had the work ethic and had the willingness. I mean, there's a handful of guys. I remember I had a linebacker from North Carolina probably 10 years ago on there who was a crazy athlete, but also would eat like a ton of McDonald's. And you're like, that was part of why I had him on there. His numbers were deserving right. Well, but just, you know, you'd hear his diet and you're like, how is this guy, you know, eating the way he does and still getting the results he does? But by and large, most of these guys have made such a commitment in terms of not just their workout and training and focus, but also in their diet too, to do that and have that success.
All right, so let me bring it full circle. One last thought. You touched on some of the players and the way they've taken to social media or gone to networks, and they're being more and more vocal. Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields. Like, how has the pandemic empowered players and potentially changed the power structure in college sports?
This is going to be fascinating to watch going forward, Jim, because I think you saw – look, a lot of times the media can say certain things, but it's hard for them to get access to the players because they're really behind the wall of sports information or coaches. So maybe you see them speaking out on Twitter, on social media, and that's where their voice starts to shine through. And I think we saw this from a handful of players, whether it's Sam Ellinger at Texas, certainly Trevor Lawrence, who has a big platform, especially because of the success he's had and the NFL interest, and you're seeing Justin Fields with that. And I think that is only going to continue to go forward as name, image, and likeness happens next year in terms of how college athletes, not just college football players, can leverage their brand power both locally and nationally. And I think that's going to be a real thing. A lot of these athletes grew up in, you know, with social media as part of their upbringing. And I think it's now they see that people are responding to it. I still think some of this stuff is very organic. And a lot of things I think are players discovering not just their voice, but, you know, a lot of times they may know other athletes because they saw them on recruiting trips or at the opening where Nike gets all these guys together in the summer. And I think because some of those relationships are already kind of loosely formed, but I think you will see more of that because they know their voice is not just being heard, but I think there's a lot of them see it as like our voice is needed right now because we know the networks, we know college football coaches are making millions, we know the universities are making millions, we know, and I think so they see that and they're, I think they feel like the system, not that the system has entirely used them, that they don't benefit because they, you know, with the educations they're getting, the opportunities they're getting, that is a real thing. But I think when they talk about the concerns that they have, that sometimes that aren't getting picked up on. You know, when the Pac-12 movement started to happen, I talked to a head coach in the conference who said, listen, I agree with a lot of things they're saying. I think they have a, you know, I don't agree with exactly everything on their platform, but most of it I think is very sensible and very savvy. And I think that those are things that they need to have lined up. And I think it's good to have the dialogue. And so in the face of a pandemic, I think this is one of the things that will be fascinating to see how it gets leveraged and where it goes from here.
Agreed. It's a long time coming. Bruce, if you don't mind, one last thing. I know that I said I had one last thing, but in terms of the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, how concerned are coaches about a mass exodus or players transferring? And then how big of a risk would that be for a player to transfer?
Well, the transfer part, Jim, is do they have places to land, right? Because there's only – people assume, oh, you have an 85-man scholarship limit. But when it comes to, like, initial eligibility, there may be only 25 guys a school can sign of a given year. So a lot of times we see so-and-so entered the transfer portal. You'll see that tweeted out, depending on, you know, whoever it is. But most of those players don't end up landing someplace else because there's not opportunities. Sometimes – college players think, well, this school recruited me and offered me out of high school. So they just assume that that school is going to want them again. And they may not have room for them. So there's that piece of it. I think the other tricky part of this, and I know this for certain with on the Big Ten side, is those coaches want to make sure their players know they had their back. Yes, this did not get articulated well by the Big Ten office as for explanation. But the coaches want to make sure that their players know, hey, we definitely had your back, because that's something you don't want to get recruited against. Well, these coaches and these programs care more, and these universities and these conferences care more about football or football players than we do at our place. That's a tough narrative to be battling in an uphill fight. And I think all that stuff are things that are kind of schools and coaches feel like they're constantly fighting against a quote-unquote narrative.
Well, Bruce, this is exactly why I took on this side hustle about 3 years ago, because this is not the kind of conversation, although you and I have done this for a long time together, we could never have this kind of deep, deep dive on my daily radio program. So I want to tell you first, expertly done, as always. Thank you very much for that, and thanks for making time. I got a lot out of that. I know our listeners did too, and this is a really complex and difficult time, and I think you made a lot of sense of it. So thank you so much for doing that, Bruce. It was great to get caught up.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Thank you for having me.
Everybody knows about the dangers of driving drunk. You could get into a crash. People could get hurt or killed. But let's take a moment and look at some surprising statistics. Nearly 29 people in the United States die every single day in alcohol-impaired vehicle crashes. That's one person every 50 minutes. Even though drunk driving fatalities have fallen by a third in the past 3 decades, drunk driving crashes still claim more than 10,000 lives every single year. Drunk driving can have a big impact on your wallet as well. You could get arrested and incur huge legal expenses. You could possibly even lose your job. So, what can you do to prevent drunk driving? Plan a safe ride home before you start drinking. Designate a sober driver or call a taxi. If somebody you know has been driving, take their keys and arrange for them to get a sober ride home. We all know the consequences of driving drunk, but one thing is for sure. You're wrong if you think that it's not a big deal. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA. Huge thanks to Bruce Feldman for his time and his insight. Nobody better than that. And if you want to check out more of what he has done, pick up his book, The QB, The Making of Modern Quarterbacks. It is absolutely worth your time. And again, he's got another book coming out shortly. Speaking of things worth your time, go ahead, hit the subscribe button on whatever platform you're listening to so you can automatically stay in touch with every new episode of this pod. It is the best decision that you're going to make today. I'll be back next week with another ep. But before we get there, let me go ahead and clear 2 weeks worth of voicemail of tape.
First new message.
Hey, Rome, what's up? This is David from Buffalo. Man, I'll tell you one thing. These bubbles in the NHL and the NBA are really working. I mean, it's just been a great idea. You know, both these leagues put this in. They've made baseball once again look like complete idiots. The NFL, I mean, you know the NFL is going to try to play a regular season, but it's going to be next to impossible to do it with all the contact and how the players are right near each other. You can say what you want about Bettman. You can say what you want about Adam Silver. These guys did it right. That's all it comes down to.
Message saved. Next message.
Hey, Rome, Jim from Holland. Your podcast in the past with Iguodala, you were talking about various things and got on to the Peloton stock, how he invested in it. You missed out on it. Well, I am a trader on the side, and so I bought some shares the other day, and it's up 5%. So, hey, thanks for the stock tip. And now Dave Stewart talks about the Zen products. I'm going to be checking those out. Hey, so, hey, thanks for advertising quality stuff. Peace out.
Message saved. Next message.
Jim, John in New York. Hey, listen, I was wondering, you think it's a sign you're getting old when prospective dates got to let you know that their teeth are their own and they hopefully that your teeth are your own as well? I was just wondering what you thought about that.
Message deleted. Next message.
Yo, 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 Rome. I'm still waiting for the time where you pick up the phone and surprise me by saying, hello, this is Jim. I'd probably lose my shit. Anyway, just got out of work. Very grateful in this time to have a job. Had a guest this evening. Very professional. The most respectful young man with what looked like his mother. So the end of his experience comes, pays with credit card. I see Goggins, David Goggins. Mr. Goggins, here you are. Oh, thank you very much. You ever go on Jim Rome? Yes, I have. I just couldn't be thankful enough to meet the man you interviewed who is the same person on air as outside of the limelight. It was very awesome. Anyway, thanks for the time. I'm out.
Message saved. Next message.
Oh, Romy, man, I'm in the midst of a deep dive on the podcast. And Terry Bradshaw, man, he's the best, dude. Just listening to him reminisce about his time with the film screen legend Burt Reynolds. Can't help but wonder, I believe Terry Bradshaw was name-dropping Bruce Lee by mistake. He was talking Jackie Chan, but that was cool, man, listening to him talk about, you know, Roger Moore, Sammy Davis Jr., just shooting the shit on the film set was awesome, bro.
Message saved. Next message.
Hey, Jim, Steve in Santa Fe. You know, you make my day in the mornings, man. I think I told you I played in Albany the night you were in New York doing your Hall of Fame thing, and I would have been there in a second. So hope everything's okay. Talk to Rit. Didn't want to go on the air. Just said hi. Talk to Hawk once and talk to Kelly once. He answered the phone. They were all cool.
Message saved. Next message.
Jim Rome, brother. It's the Hulkster coming out of the retirement, brother. And I want to announce it here first. I need a sparring partner. You up for it, brother? Are any of the clones up for it? The Vic and No Cal. The friggin' man in Indiana. Does he need some? What you gonna do when the largest arms in the world run wild on you and the clones, brother? Later.
Message deleted. You have no more messages.